The following is a paid program and does not necessarily reflect the opinions of the staff or management of Visionary Related Entertainment.
Good morning. It's 7:06, August the 12th, Monday morning, and you're tuned to Mauitopia Radio, and hosted by Ori Kopelman. Good morning, Ori. How are you today?
Good morning, Gary. And we are talking about creating Mauitopia, and today we're going to talk about how to prevent crime and mental illness, which is one of the things that's very important to help us create Mauitopia. And we have a special guest joining me in just a second, which is Netra Halpern. I'll introduce her in just a minute. I will first define the fact that Mauitopia will be an ideal utopian society of the future, a first-of-its-kind place in the world on the scale of over 100,000 people, where thanks to technology, all of us have our survival needs met of food, clothing, and shelter, while pursuing our individual self-actualization, a place where we'd find true happiness by each contributing our unique gifts to the community, a place where we can all coexist in peace and harmony with no crime and where we can all help each other grow and succeed. Mauitopia's free market economics will be based on regulated capitalism and make the island a real paradise, Maui truly no ka'oi. In Mauitopia, we all win as we serve the rest of the world as a model for the society of the future. And as I mentioned, today we have Netra Halpern. And Netra earned her bachelor's degree in political science and her master's degree in psychology. She has worked as a social worker at Maui Youth and Family Services, Aloha House, and Women Helping Women. Ms. Halpern has also worked directly with inmates at MCCC, both as substance abuse counselor and supervisor. And while interim executive director at Neighborhood Place of Wailuku, she assisted with the parenting classes. On a policy level, Netra has worked with State Senator Will Aspero, chair of the Public Safety Committee, and with Mike Hoffman, administrator of Hawaii's prisons. Netra is currently Community Relations for District 13, North Shore, Molokai, and Lanai for Representative Melly Carroll, Chair of the Human Services Committee. Netra lives in Haiku. Hi, Netra.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Fantastic. You ready to talk about how we can prevent or lower crime in Maui?
Absolutely. The main thing that we need to look at is what are the causes of crime? Why do people commit crime? And 70% of the people who are currently incarcerated have meet the medical criteria of substance abuse disorder, and then with an additional 50%, drugs or alcohol were involved with their crime. So basically, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, that is mostly what causes crime.
Wow. Well, it sounds if we could get rid of that, we would get rid of the majority, if not all, of the problem.
Absolutely. And so that's why, as I said, Ori mentioned, I'm the community liaison for Representative Melly Carroll, and that is one of the things that we're really working on. She's the Human Services Chair, and then because of my social work background, we're working with, collaborating with local organizations and, you know, have some ideas and some insights on what we're going to do, especially on the island of Maui to help with, reducing crime. And basically it all comes down to, substance abuse treatment, as I said. And Maui, we have Aloha House. They're a great organization. They just aren't big enough. And as Jed Cunningham, the director, told me, I used to work for him when I worked for Maui Youth and Family Services, is he has authorization for more beds than he has the funding for. And so you know, it's hard to make money. I know they do a fundraising gala and they make money with that, but there just isn't the support for that. And another thing that I've been working to do is I've written lots of op-ed articles is inform the public. And because when people think, okay, we have to get rid of crime, they think law enforcement. And, you know, I mean, absolutely law enforcement is necessary, but it's kind of the last resort.
Right. By the way, does the drug court have a good reputation?
Well, I did, when I was working at the program at the prison, at the jail, that was through the drug court program. And, you know, I don't know their exact success rate. I know that, I know that they do have some success, but then they also, there is some revolving door happening. And, you know, that's why we're looking at, more comprehensive programs, because the drug treatment model in the whole country is basically, you know, you get somebody in for 60 days, you deal with their drug abuse problem, and then thank you very much, you're on your way. And that's just not enough time. And so nationally you'll see, you know, that drug treatment programs that many people have to go in numerous times because it's not dealing with the basic psychological issues underlying, the job training issues underlying, and the physical issues, because drug abuse, alcohol abuse is very, very hard on the body.
That's for sure.
I mean, as far as alcohol abuse, everybody knows that, you know, it'll destroy your liver. And what happens is that people then, you know, they join AA, and these are good programs as far as support groups, but they don't delve into some of these other issues in great depth. And then they'll start eating sugar instead. They'll start drinking coffee instead. And those just mask the problem, because often people have hypoglycemia or diabetes are caused by especially the alcohol abuse, and then by using sugar, that's just kind of masking it. And then the craving, like a lot of times, especially with alcohol, the craving for alcohol is really a craving for sugar.
I had an amazing friend who actually had fought in Vietnam. When he came back, he drank a six-pack of beer and a bottle of Jack Daniels every day for many years, as well as was smoking. Like a chain smoker. And he one day had a religious conversion and literally decided to give all that up cold turkey. Now, I know that doesn't typically happen, but it does. I mean,
absolutely. And that does happen sometimes, and that's awesome. I mean, if somebody comes to that point, that's awesome. And then, you know, if you look at, you know, just the question of why do people have these revelations? You know, sometimes it just happens, but sometimes they have a revelation because it's nurtured, you know, and that's what we're looking at. How can we create an environment where a person is nurtured to have that kind of revelation? And
it might be by divine coincidences, because he says he had three different people tell him that week, hey, you really should start going to church. And for whatever reason, one morning he just decided, you know what, I'm going to go to church. And that's when he decided to give all this addiction up cold turkey. And like I said, the good news is it's been a number of years, and he has never slipped back.
Right. And for him, it was just obviously the right time. It
exactly.
was just somehow the right time. And what was I going to say about, it's about creating the environment where some of these other needs are met. And see, that's another thing, is that the whole system now, which is basically a punishment model, that's the model in the United States. And there was a rehabilitation model that was, I think, until the 70s. And then I don't know if it was Nixon or Reagan, at some point, the whole rehabilitation model just got pushed to the wayside. I'm talking about because, you know, since the show is actually about crime, got pushed to the wayside, and then the punishment model came. And what people don't realize is every 97% of the people that are in jail get out. 97%. So if you say, well, I just want to lock them up because I want them away from society. Well, yeah, they'll be away from society for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. But then when they get out, they'll be more angry, more traumatized. Their body will be more depleted because of, you know, prison food. And to say that they're not going to be doing drugs, that's also just plain old not true. People do drugs in prison all the time. And so to say, well, you know, we'll make them just, you know, think about what they did, it just doesn't work. It's like a medical treatment that has been shown to not work, to actually make patients sicker, and it's continued. So it's a huge waste of taxpayers' dollars, and it doesn't work. And then in the meantime, their family is suffering. You know, if they have a family, that family isn't getting their income that they would have gotten. If they have a wife or a girlfriend, she's suffering. If they have children, the children are then seven times as likely to end up in jail themselves because of having a parent in jail, absent from the home, and with all that stigma. And then another thing is because of...
And do you know what the recidivism rate is? I mean, how often do they end up going back to jail?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's like 80%. I think actually this was, I read this, I did take the class, you have to read a manual and take a test and take a class if you want to volunteer in the jail, in MCCC. And one of the statistics that they give in this manual is I think it's 80%.
I remember it being close to that too.
Yeah, and so I think what that's showing is that the program isn't working. It's not showing that there's something wrong with these people and they're not choosing to change. It's showing that the system that they're, I would say, subjected to does not encourage change. I mean, any parent knows that you have to have boundaries, you have to have accountability, you have to have consequences, but if your whole discipline program with your children consists of mostly those, and the nurturing, the love, and the support are in very short supply, you're not going to have very well-adjusted children.
Agreed. Let's start talking about how this all gets started. So one of the first drugs that comes to mind is marijuana, which is, relatively speaking, not a hard drug, right? So one of the issues is, should marijuana be legalized? What do you think about that? And maybe we should even ask our people out in the audience. Please feel free to call in and tell us what you think about, should marijuana be legalized?
And that's, you know, a very good question. And, you know, Ori, on my Facebook page, I post about a lot of different topics, a lot of national topics, security and banking, but whenever I post something about marijuana, I get lots of hits, lots of likes, lots of comments, and my opinion is that it should. And the question isn't, do I personally like marijuana, or even do I want, you know, my close friends, if I have employees, if I, you know, do I want them to be using marijuana, or even do I want, you know, pilots to be using marijuana. The question is, should it be legal? And making something illegal doesn't necessarily stop it. I mean, everybody knows if you tell somebody not to do something, some people will do it just because you told them not to do it.
Right.
And other people will do it in spite of the fact that you told them not to do it. And the biggest question, and there's this organization called LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. So these are police officers who've been there in the thick of things, working with the supposed war on drugs, which, by the way, there is no less drug abuse than when they started. So this war, so to speak, has been completely and utterly a failure.
And it's been a long time, right? I mean, how?
Oh, it's been billions, billions, billions. There's a online clock where it says the number of dollars spent on the war of drugs, and of course, it just keeps clicking away. And you know, I was disappointed because our president said, you know, I agree that we need to stop drug abuse on the demand side more than the supply side, i.e. the law enforcement side. And then numerically, dollars, he put more money back into the supply side. And I was going to talk a little bit about that on a national level in a minute. But anyway, so law enforcement against prohibition has come to the conclusion that drugs, including marijuana, actually all drugs, should be legal. Not that they like them, not that they're good, and especially harder drugs are absolutely, especially crack or ice, are absolutely not healthy, they're not good. Ice has no redeeming qualities at all. And unfortunately, Representative Carroll just returned from a conference, I think it's North Carolina, anyway, on the mainland, about youth corrections. And that's one of the things she came back with, is that that because Hawaii is fifth in the nation as far as ICE addiction, luckily, though, we are going to be getting some funding from a major charitable organization to help with that. And so look for some really good projects in that. But absolutely, making drugs illegal just creates a criminal element, and it actually creates less treatment and less control and absolutely zero taxes. What it does
Nitra,
do...
Just a second, we have a call.
Okay, let's hear the person.
I'd like to go to the call, and then we'll come back to discussing those three topics, anyways,
okay,
in just a second.
Go ahead, caller. You're on the air, live on the air, 11:10 a.m. on Mauitopia.
Oh, yeah. Aloha. I wanted to chime in. You know, I listened last week, and I kind of became, I was all excited to listen, you know, listen in. But when I started listening, the lady, you know, started using the terms like monster and abusive and stuff like this, and I knew she was a women's rights activist, and I started becoming nauseated and queasy just listening to her estrogen just, you know, permeating the room, and I couldn't even breathe to that point, you know. I just wanted to comment on that. And what I wanted to share regarding today's subject is, you know, these women's rights activists, a lot of them have deranged and demented thinking. And, you know, if a guy cheats on his wife, he's called a terrible thing. But if a woman cheats on her husband, then it's like the husband's going to get upset and, you know, go commit, you know, perhaps assault somebody.
Hello, caller.
And end up in jail.
We're talking about drug abuse today.
Yeah, no, I know. But the point that I'm making is that regarding the jails and stuff is a lot of the times it's the woman who instigates the male to commit a crime, and the poor guy gets all emotional and goes and attacks the woman or the woman's friend. And then he's the one who ends up in jail while the woman walks away. And she's the one who started or instigated the whole incident.
Right. Well, I'm guessing that's true in some cases, but it probably is also true in the other direction as well. So it's really not a male and female or man and woman issue. It's a broader issue than that.
But right.
Thank you so much for your call. And Netra, let's go back to discussing the main topic, which is, should marijuana be legalized? And furthermore, a corollary is marijuana a gateway drug to harder drugs, which some people I've heard say it is. What do you think, Nitra?
I mean, it depends on, you know, whether you're looking at thing with a cause-effect or I think the other one is corollary, in that I would say that people who use harder drugs sometimes use marijuana first, but so does every single time people, you know, as children drink milk first. I mean, there's no, it doesn't, one thing doesn't lead to another. And there's an also a counter argument, I don't know if you've seen the bumper stickers that say, Green Harvest has put our island on ice. And basically saying that, of course, you know, in the district where I live, the North Shore, Hana, Huelo, Haiku, a lot of marijuana has been grown because I think it's just a very, the crop likes
profitable
it, basically.
Crop, yeah.
And so they've had, helicopters. Flying over at great expense to the helicopter to find these marijuana fields and to arrest everybody. And the contention is that that a very aggressive enforcement has caused the young people that would otherwise you know, smoke weed, so to speak, to start with the harder drugs. And so that has actually created the problem is by strong enforcement against marijuana.
Okay, I would be curious what people out there think. So the phone lines are open at 242-7800, and please call us and let us know what you think about it. And again, the purpose of the program is not to talk about drugs, but we're talking about how to reduce or even eliminate crime on Maui. But at the same time, we want to discuss what appears to be 70 or 80% of the cause of crime, which is drug use. As well as, by the way, drug trade, because I've heard that a lot of the crime is related to the dealers and if somebody bought it or didn't get it, etc. And I enjoy the TV show Cops, and you'll see, you'll see a lot of situations where crime happens as a result of the deal going down or not going down. And again, this has nothing to do with, in my case, I personally have never enjoyed marijuana, but that's really not the point. The point is, how do we reduce crime for the society? So if anybody out there has an opinion, please give us a call, and Netra and I, Ori Kopelman, will be happy to take your calls. And I think, meanwhile, it's time for our halfway in the show break. So, Gary, if you could play our song. Thank you.
Heaven touches land. The light that's in the people's eyes. Show love is in command. The scent of ginger fills the air. There's beauty everywhere. Look into our heart and soul. See how much we care. Practicing aloha each and every day. We're guided by aloha, and kindness shows the way. Practicing aloha with the spirit of these lands. Practicing aloha, bring peace into our lands. Rushing mountain waters, fights the stream to distant shores. Kick, eat, play, and laugh. Their hearts call out for more. This is a sacred aina that we cherish and we share. The magic that we find here is what we all look for. Practicing aloha each and every day. The spirit that's alive here guides us on.
All right, welcome back to Maui, Creating Mauitopia with Ori Kubelman. Today we are talking to Netra Halperin.
And hi again, Netra.
Hi again, Ori.
Okay, here we are. So maybe we can talk about some of the legislation aspects and how can we, in fact, change some of these laws that may or may not be that may not be helping our drug situation and the ultimately the crime situation. So what do you think about that, Netra?
Well, some of the most dangerous laws have been the three strikes laws. And what has been happening is that lawmakers see, there's a way to get public support for programs is they've created fear in their constituents and then said, I'll save you. So that's called the, you know, you create the problem and then you create the solution. And that's been a common political strategy. So that's what lawmakers have done, you know, mayors, governors, presidents have done as a way to garner support. And the other thing
is... So, for example, are you against three strikes, you're out?
I'm against three strikes. And the reason for this is
I'm kind of for that.
Huh?
I'm kind of for that, but why don't you tell me why you're against it?
The reason I'm against it is that judges are appointed because they are considered to have wisdom, discretion, and knowledge of the law. And the three strikes rules take that away from them. And what sometimes the crimes that people end up committing to get back into jail are petty crimes. For instance,
but does the three strikes law apply to petty crimes, or is it
yes?
Just
and speaking
it's
of petty crimes,
it's not just felonies.
Pardon me?
I thought it was felonies.
Okay, well, the threshold for felonies, for instance, in most states, the threshold for a shoplifting felony is, I think, about $1,000. In Hawaii, the threshold for a felony for shoplifting is $250.
So low.
A kid, huh?
That's low.
It's way, way low. A kid could be, you know, lift a pair of Oakley sunglasses. One pair, and that's a felony, and their whole life is ruined. A kid. And then the other thing is, back to the whole issue of repetitive crime, if you say, well, the person didn't learn, well, the reason that the person didn't learn is they never received any actual treatment in jail. Let's say they commit a crime. They're a young person or middle-aged, but usually it's young. They commit a crime, they go to jail. So if at that point they received comprehensive rehabilitation and treatment program that deals with the physical, if they have drug abuse, the emotional, the trauma. People commit crimes because they have trauma. Like, for instance, there's a gentleman named Akilah Shirills. He's a colleague of mine, and he's been in some of the movies of late discussing gang violence. And is there gang violence on Maui? I talked to the chief of police.
I didn't know we had gangs on Maui, do we?
It's incipient. In the sense that at the high schools, at the middle schools, kids are not allowed to wear handkerchiefs that might have certain colors. To me, that's a very superficial way of looking at it. But according to him, I still want to talk about gangs just because if it exists in this country, it could come to here. And if we keep sending our prisoners to Arizona where they're going to associate with mainland inmates, they're going to, you know, pick up the bad habits. But basically,
we want to do the opposite, right? As far
exactly.
as in Hawaii and Maui, we want to export our good behaviors, right? The aloha
exactly.
spirit.
Exactly. We
want
to be a model.
Aloha but, practices and not the opposite.
Right. But I do want to talk about Akilah Shirils. He's a gang expert. He was in gangs as a youth. 7 of his friends were killed in gangs, and then he somehow got out. He went to college. He, you know, got on a good life, and then he had a son. And his son was away at college, at Evergreen College, so obviously on the right track. He came home for Christmas break, and he was killed by gangs. And this man, instead of going into revenge mode, he started a program called the Forgiveness Project. And then also he managed to negotiate a truce between the Bloods and the Crips. So this man, I'm just giving you that as a background to that he
was
really...
Was this in L.A. or...?
This is in South Central L.A., yes.
Okay.
And I did actually talk to the chief of police about him, and he said, oh, yeah, I'd be interested. And I did put them together email-wise, and... so far, nothing has come with that, but I really hope he does collaborate with him. But anyway, he said that the reason people, I think it's mostly men, join gangs is because sexual abuse. These are men.
Mm.
These men have been sexually assaulted, and they are so angry, they join gangs. So what I'm saying is that the main reason that people commit crimes, in addition to drugs, and then basically those that go together, is untreated trauma. So someone, it's just like in the medical field, if someone has an underlying disease and they go to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, you have a cold, let's give you NyQuil. You know, when that person has some, you know, serious disease, of course they're not going to get better, and then they're going to come back. And that's the same with crime. If the underlying problem, which is drug abuse, but then drug abuse is often caused by trauma. You know, it's caused by trauma. It's caused by lack of, you know, employment opportunities. It's caused by mental health issues. Then they're not going to be able to change because they won't have the help that they need. So people don't need punishment. They need help.
And that's why, thankfully, we have lots of counselors on the island, right, including yourself.
Right, but they're not being hired.
Hmm.
It's not that we lack skilled professionals. We have absolutely plenty of skilled professionals. We just don't have, there's no funding to pay them. And that's, of course, gotten worse. And that's because of, you know, most states in this country, except for North Dakota, because they have a state bank, and that's a whole different question. But anyway, most states in this country, from various reasons, their budgets had been slashed ever since the 2008 crash. And so even money that the states would have had, you know, that the legislators and the governor would have been willing to release for this cause, have been pulled back due to economic reasons.
Although, having been in business my whole life, people always say, hey, we want more money, a larger budget, we don't have enough. But the reality is, there's only a fixed pot, a certain amount of money, and the issue really is priorities. And so I would put it right back on our legislatures as well as the people in our government as far as how they are prioritizing the funds that they're using. Which brings me right back to the question of, how do we put these people in office in the first place?
Right, and that's another question, is that, you know, someone could decide they want to go into public service and run for office, and they could even start off with the best of intentions. I want to help. I want to make this better country, state, county.
Right, very few people go into politics for fun, right?
Well, no, I'm saying, I mean, it's also, I mean, politics actually is kind of fun.
Oh.
But my point is that...
I've never been in it, so I don't know.
Okay. I thought you ran for office, sorry.
I ran for office, but I didn't get elected. I ended up number 8 of 11 people that ran for mayor, but I'm planning to run again.
That was quite a fierce race. That was quite a fierce race.
So I've been in the race.
You've been in the race. You've done that much. But what I'm trying to get at is that it costs a lot of money to campaign. Campaigning is basically advertising. You look at any business, they have to have an advertising budget. Advertising costs money. You know, it depends on what level, like at the, you know, county council level, at the state house or state senate level, it's more about flyers, sending direct mail to people's houses.
Netra, excuse me just one second. We have another caller, and before we get to them, I just want to agree with your point that I think getting money out of politics is a huge issue.
Right. I haven't, yeah, I know, I've got bogged down in one little aspect, but yes, absolutely. Let's listen to the caller.
Okay, caller, go ahead.
Hi, good caller. Morning, Ari. Good morning, Netra. This is Cindy Paulus. How are you?
Hi, Cindy.
Good
Thanks
morning,
for calling.
Cindy. You're back from Tahiti?
Yes, I just got back yesterday, and yes, even they have problems in their paradise, too, and a lot of it is political, but I had to get back to that. I don't know if you had a chance when you're getting set up for, before the show to listen to the newscast at the top of the hour, because it was exactly about what you were talking about with the, I was actually stopped in my tracks when I heard them say that they found that the cost of trying to maintain people in prisons has become unbearable for everyone, and there's no more room, and that they are going to try to change the drug laws because, or actually revise them to the point because a lot of the people in prison are there for drug offenses, and they weren't serious drug offenses, but they are drug offenses, and they can't bear the cost on the system in the prisons anymore. So I was really, I don't know if you heard that story, but it was just exactly in line with what you're talking about.
No, and I just recently, yesterday or the day before, heard the cost. What is the cost to have a person in jail for a year? Is it like $70,000 or something?
No, it's not necessarily that much. It's more like $40,000.
Okay, $40,000. That's still a lot.
It's a lot. And on top of that, like what you were saying, the problem is so awful that the fact is, number one, it doesn't change them. I think they did actually say they're going to try to put them in rehab instead. You don't overcome problems with drugs in jail. And if you were in jail for not a serious event of using drugs, you, of course, can be exposed to much more dangerous situations that could be life-changing in a terrible way in jail. So, I really do think that there is a huge change happening throughout the country. We're seeing more and more states legalizing marijuana, and it truly could be a huge source of income if they were done properly here. I think that it's actually, didn't it come up for legislation, Netra?
Well, medical marijuana has come up.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I think medical marijuana is very important, but then it starts creating another kind of ruse in mm-hmm. that, you know, let's just be honest, many people use marijuana for recreational purposes, and then they have to pretend. And also what I've heard is some of these medical marijuana dispensaries that the feds have come in and shut them down and arrested them. And, mm-hmm. you know, and that gets to another whole, and thank you, Cindy, for calling in and alerting us to that. No, I didn't actually, I hadn't been listening to that newscast, so I'm glad that we're, that there's a trend, and I know that in California, they've been actually ordered to let go many of their prisoners, and sending people home is not necessarily the answer either. I mean, it's, you know, some people, but many people, they do actually need some kind of services, but as, you know, Cindy, you just agreed with us, prison is not it. It's just not the solution.
So what's
unless they can do rehab prisons, the only thing I could think, you know, because obviously there's the level of people that could use recreational drugs that might get busted, but obviously there's danger with harder drugs. I don't want people on ice that are addicted to ice running around the streets, and we know the terrible crime problem that happens from people who are on dangerous drugs. That of course, would need serious rehab. And, I mean, anyone that's running around addicted to ice or running around the streets of any country or
right,
any
although
city.
One of the statistics I frequently quote to my friends is that Hawaii actually has the lowest rate of violent crimes in the nation. So that's the good news.
It is true. It's a very small percentage of the people in jail or prison are
violent offenders. So let me give you the bad news. Mm-hmm. We have the highest rate of property crimes in the nation.
Yeah. Well, I'm not. Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised.
You can look at the difference of us and them here. I mean, when you see all the people that kind of feel like, well, this was their land anyway, and we're coming in with all this extra money, and I think it's unfortunate because I've seen many people when I do weddings on the beach, you have to tell people to lock up everything in their car, the valuables in the car, because tourists seem to get hit the most often with luggage and thefts and things stolen.
Exactly, I was told that.
Well, they've got it. It doesn't matter. They have insurance. We'll take it, you know. And I hate to say it that way, but that does seem to happen. But
no, it's exactly what I was warned when I got here 20 years ago. People said, you know, be careful that you don't want to be looked at as a tourist.
But getting back to the drugs, I think that the only solution is really, really taking a look at the difference in different drugs and having rehab available. Serious rehab. I wish they would have rehab programs. I do not know why they don't have rehab programs in prison. I mean, rehab programs could go such a long ways, and that I don't understand, you know, why they don't have AA. Maybe they do have AA in prison, or maybe they do have rehab.
They have AA, but it's very minimal, mm-hmm. and that's it. And AA is a great support group.
Alcoholics Anonymous?
Alcoholics Anonymous is a great support group, but in my opinion, it doesn't incorporate enough of the other things. Like I said, the physical harm that is caused by drugs and alcohol, the emotional, the trauma that needs to be dealt with. So I think it's just nowhere near comprehensive enough. And it's not jail. I mean, I have, as Ori mentioned, I've worked in MCCC various times, and I've also visited people in MCCC, and it is not a healing environment. And
how could prison be a healing environment the way it is? Come on, you know, I mean, the idea is that it's the old paradigm that if you're in prison, it should be a terrible experience. And of course, we don't want prison to be a country club, but I do think that there's certainly guidelines to try to reconstruct people's lives that we see in sometimes the homeless shelters here that do try to do just that with people who are back and trying to get back on the streets and reconstruct their life. That is,
which makes sense.
Give them some restrictions as far as you know, being abusive and alcoholism and drug use. And, you know, if it could be put the same, some of the structures we've seen in some of the homeless places, the beautiful places that are here to try to help, which are full, by the way, and no one can get in because they're completely jammed full of people, that it would be so great to be able to reinforce that structure with the money that's being spent handling the overpopulation of drugs with drugs that aren't as dangerous in jail. That's just my thing, but it's a great subject, and I'm really glad to hear you talking about it. I'll listen to the rest of it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cindy. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call, Cindy, and make sure to come in. I have a present for you. Okay.
So another thing I wanted to mention is a specific problem to Hawaii and actually even Maui is the pretrial detainment. The reason that MCCC, which, by the way, there's jails and there's prisons, and a jail is for people who are pretrial, so between when they get arrested and when they actually have gone to trial, and for people that have sentences that are a year or less, and for people that have been in prison on the mainland or at OCCC and are in their last year. And Hawaii, the reason that MCCC is so full is because we keep pretrial people longer than any other state, and Maui's the worst of any county of anywhere in the entire United States.
That's horrible.
Yeah, there's this organization called Justice Reinvestment. It's a federal project. It's part of the Justice Center, and it's funded by Congress. And myself and several other prison reform advocates invited them to come. And of course, the governor and, you know, Speaker of the House, Senate President, etc., agreed, yes, this is a good program. Let's invite them. So they did come, and they did a data-driven analysis of Hawaii's criminal justice system, and then they came up with these conclusions. They made a PowerPoint, and then I went around to various Rotary clubs and gave a presentation, and people's jaws were dropping. They did not realize what is happening, and that's because our media just talks about, it objectifies crime, it objectifies people that commit crime, and it creates scare tactics because I guess that creates good ratings, but it's not the real truth of what's really happening.
And it doesn't help. I mean, our real goal is to turn all these people back into contributing members of the society.
Absolutely.
And we had a good guest on the show, actually, from Mental Health Kakua a few weeks ago, who used to be homeless and today is a contributing member of society, and I think a lot of her trauma issues have been solved, as well as now she's a contributing member of society. And that's really our goal, to help us create Mauitopia.
Absolutely.
So, Netra, how do we get money out of politics? Because, again, even, you know, in terms of sponsoring this show, I decided not to take any sponsors because, while it'd be nice in a way to have the money, on the other hand, if I ever do get elected into politics, I would kind of owe somebody a favor, you know? And I don't want to owe anybody anything. I want to be rational and objective as far as making decisions in politics.
Absolutely. And first I want to draw the connection between money and politics and crime. The reason that this is an important issue is because there's this organization called ALEC, American Legislative, and I don't know, I forgot what the E was for, commission. Anyway, their whole purpose is to make model legislation, give it to state representatives to pass it. These model legislation, though, are not in line with what we've been talking about here. The private prison industry is a multi-billion dollar growing, though I think they're having some problems lately, but a growing industry, and people can invest on the stock market in private prisons. And so because of that, it's like the model of a resort. Any resort here in Maui, they want the most guests for the longest stays and the most repeat customers. That's a great business model for a resort. However, when that's the business model for a prison, it gets very twisted. There's some very serious moral questions. Basically, they want to continue with the drug laws because they want more warm bodies.
Now, is MCCC a private prison? Or?
No, MCCC is not. However, Saguaro, there's a prison in Saguaro, Arizona.
Where a lot of our inmates got sent, right?
Well, basically, the whole prison was built for Hawaii guys. I think there were women on the mainland in prisons, but they got raped, and so they, I think, have brought most of them back. Mm. But yes, that prison is for Hawaii people. And that creates another whole hardship on the friends and family of those
people.
Oh,
yeah, the distance is quite a ways.
Anyway, so yes. So even though our prison, we do not have any private prisons here in Hawaii, and you know, that's why I have been against the prison in Puunani. Well, actually, they say it's going to be a jail. Is number one, as I mentioned, that the only reason that MCCC is overcrowded in the first place is because they're not following national policy. Even though I'm not happy with the national, how the national criminal justice and prison industry is going, in Hawaii it's even worse, and in Maui it's even the most worst.
Netra, I agree with that, but can we get back to, we only have about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
Gary's showing me 4 minutes left in the show, so let's get back to talk about money and politics, and maybe we can talk for a second about the model they have on the Big Island.
Right, okay, so anyway, just to quickly make that distinction, so because of all the money that is to be made with the current system, these organizations, Corrections Corporation of America, et cetera, they give campaign contributions to candidates to help them get reelected or elected, and then those candidates vote for their rules. So that is basically the problem, is that instead of candidates being publicly funded, and so then they're free to actually represent the voters, because candidates must rely on private campaign contributions, like Ori just mentioned, they are then beholden, and in this case, they're beholden to corporations, industries that make money off of crime. So it's not only criminals, so to speak, who are making money off of crime. There's many legal industries that are making lots of money off it and want to keep it going. Now, there is a program in Hawaii County, publicly...
On the Big Island?
Yes, on the Big Island, for publicly funded campaigns. And the way that works is that each candidate, generally when a candidate, like I run for office, I ran for state house representative. For that seat, you do need to have 15 nomination signatures. Now, you usually go and get 30 because half the people, they don't actually live in the same place as when they registered, or they can't read the name or whatever, but you have to get only 15. Now, with this program, I think for the state representative seat, they would need to get 250 signatures. So they have to get a lot of signatures, and each person would have to donate $5. And I think that's fair, because that's, you know, even the poorest among us can cough up $5 to say, yes, I support this candidate. Once they go to the county clerk and that's all been approved, then they receive whatever money the candidate who won that seat the previous election received. For instance, for a state house seat, it would be about $30,000. So they'd get a debit card, and they could use that for their campaign expenses. Then, once they're in office, they are not beholden to anyone.
Right. Well, I would be for that. I mean, again, if everybody had the same amount of money who is running for a position, whether it's mayor or council or state or house or senate, even if they all had the same amount of money, then money would be out of the equation. So Gary is showing me that we have 2 minutes left, and I want to really thank Netra for having been on the show today.
Well, my pleasure. I had a lot of fun.
And hopefully it helps to reduce crime on Maui, as well as drug abuse, and gets people to find their unique ability to contribute to Mauitopia, and helps us to create this vision that we have for our island, which will make us not just Noka'oi, but truly Noka'oi. Again, I'm Ori Kopelman, and thank you so much for listening to Creating Mauitopia.
The ocean and mountain and sky are one. It is part of a much higher plan. Maui man. Where the upcountry flies to the sea. And the rainforest waterfall shouts melodies. Under stars at night he touched my hand. Maui man. Maui man.
Sound News headlines. I'm Jack Gisford of Vision Near Rio News Center. There are no injury or damage reports from an earthquake that rattled the Big Island. The 4.8 magnitude quake early Sunday didn't create a tsunami either. The quake happened in the Helena